The Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn Yeager brings you news and commentary on Holocaust revisionism, World War II history, free speech issues, and more. And now, here's Carolyn.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Yeager. My guest tonight is Günter Deckert from Germany, back for his fourth visit here on the Heretics Hour. If you, to refresh your memory, or refresh you or may have be listening for the first time, Günter is a former head of the National Democratic Party, the NPD, in Germany when it was really making waves, and on which behalf he spent almost 5 years in the infamous fortress prison of Mannheim, where Ernst Zundel served his time and Sylvia Stoltz is still incarcerated. All of this is for one form or another of speaking too highly of National Socialism or speaking too poorly of Holocaust narrative, one thing or another, according along those lines. In fact, when I visited Germany last year, it was Günter who drove me around his Rhineland area and showed me the prison. So I have seen it. And it's not far from where he lives. So, Günter, a very warm welcome to you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Now, you are still involved in the judicial system in your area, in your state there, and they're still after you. Tell us about what's happening with that and anything else that's going on in your own life right now.
Yes, nothing new. I was sentenced to 4 months of prison on suspense plus €600. But the prosecutor, as well as me, we went to appeal, and the appeal date is not yet fixed. So I'm waiting for it. I think it will be last this year or at the beginning of next year only. I had appealed already, and the date of appeal at a Mannheim district or a district court may be November or December. I don't know quite exactly, but I presume it will be beginning of next year only.
Well, what grounds are you appealing on?
It's because I want to get acquitted as a free man, because it's a problem of me helping to, well, publish the work of Carlo Martagno, Auschwitz, the first guessings, into German. And I did what he called the final checkup. I corrected, let's say, grammatical errors, writing errors, and a bit of style, but they say only it was my final work that made it possible that the book could appear in German. And I was sentenced to be a helper. Not the author, not the printer, not the seller, but a helper, and that is a crime in the Germany of today.
So is this book in print, in circulation in Germany now, or not?
Yes, but it's a bit difficult. It's handled like a pornographic book, because you must demand, you must ask for it in abroad. You can't get it publicly. It's like you bought in my early or the younger times a pornographic magazine. You must know where to get to, and nobody must know that you had ordered it, and it must paid in cash and not via a bank, because once you get what we call a home searching, the police comes early in the morning and they found a bank account, you get caught, and you get judged and you get sentenced as a rule. That is, there's no exception of that. That's a principle.
So they know by this all the people who have purchased this book, is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then
because if somebody
orders
a book with Barnes Review dealing with the Holocaust, and he comes in via Hamburg Harbor or a Hamburg Airport, and it's well opened by a chance, it's not regular. They from time to time they open parcels or big envelopes coming from the States, and if one they find a book dealing with the Holocaust and let's say a kind of denial in it, the person who has ordered it will get, well, the prosecutor will be brought before court, and as a rule, he will be sentenced. There's no chance of getting out of it.
Tell us what else is going on in your life. What have you been doing?
There's actually nothing. Everything is... Everything is quite normal. The weather is not too fine for the moment. I've got family problems. My wife is at hospital. She has, had a difficult operation, but she is better, and we get, my father-in-law died. We had to restore the house and a lot of family problems to be settled. Then with the grandchildren, school has begun again. They need grandpa to correct the English and French versions of their homework and so on. And from time to time, a bit of politics. Next weekend, I will go to the German community days in the Harz, that is east of Hanover, the area, northern Germany. It was a kind of seminar from Friday to Sunday next weekend.
Oh, German community days. How nice.
Yes. I organize these community days twice a year, in June and in October.
Ah, yes, that's right. That's your, you've done
of,
that.
It's a kind of moral, we're going to, moral, what is Aufrüstung? A moral push for the people present, be it old or young. It's a kind, if you are in a normal German family and you discuss that some delicate topics, you get, well, glanced at as a, well, an alien, a people from another star. The Germans prefer to accept things silently. They don't like to discuss delicate topics in public because they knew if there's anyone present who listens to it, he may get into troubles and even, well, he may and he surely gets sentenced. If it is in a bar or in a pub like it or in any restaurant, you discuss and say, well, 6 million, that's a big lie. I read, well, Singt Steglich or Professor Batz or Fred Leuchter, and anybody in a neighboring table listens to it or hears it, and he, well, can phone the police, and the police comes, he will be arrested, he will be, well, brought before court.
Will he be for saying that in public?
Yes. If anybody be caught, that is the system.
I mean, if you're just saying that to another person, I thought you had to be.
Yes. That's why, well, all those delicate or difficult topics are, what would you call it in English, are not discussed in public. Only, let's say, between good friends, or let's say, when you are abroad and talking to less foreigners, that's possible. In Germany, there's no open discussions concerning this topic.
What about your book? How is your book selling?
Yes, it's selling quite well. Not too well, but quite well. And I am, what I call it, exploiting a list, as a mailing list, of my friend Siegfried Verbeggen in Kortrijk in Flandern. And he has a kind of reading list, and, well, it sells quite well. I'm only love 200 left, and I even think of having a second edition.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. That's great.
Yes. It's a bit hard because I do it all by myself with the help of some friends. I'm not disappointed. It could be better, but, well, okay, let's go with the way it is for the moment. The people who get it are, well, thank me. So far, I haven't got any criticism concerning my, let's say, judging certain protagonists, you know, be it Zündel or be it Frau Stolz, be it Germa Rudolf. I'm very glad that I did it, and the people who receive it thank me, as a rule. And some even send more money in as I demand.
More than you asked for. Well, you know, you're such an honest man that you would say, well, it could be better or something. No, you shouldn't say that. I'm sure it's quite good. Everything that I've seen of it is excellent.
Thank you very much.
Great thing that you did there. Gerd Hanzik, let's talk about him for just a minute.
Yes.
I've been wanting to mention him. He's such a hero.
Yes. More or less, Gerd Hanzik is treated the same way I was when I was in prison. He had a sentence, and then he went abroad to Spain, but was sent back to Vienna 2 years ago. And in prison, he got another trial. And that means he will have to do, or to spend 2 more years in prison.
Yeah.
And it is because of the books he published in Spain in German. There is one book concerning Wiesenthal, this famous Vienna Jew who has the Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles, for example, two books, and the judges at the Vienna District Court said, well, that is a kind of pro-national socialism, and being pro is a crime in German Austria as well. Even saying that Hitler, for example, is responsible for the building of the motorways.
That I know, what I understand about Gerd Hanzik is that he is a real stalwart, but he is a smart man, and he was very careful. He understood what he could say, what he couldn't say, and he was careful in what he said. But they still got him. And then what you're saying is that they catch him, and they put him in prison for like 18 months, and then while he's serving his time, they come up with new charges. And then they put him in court again, and they give him more time. This is
two more years.
Yeah.
So far, you can say the problem or the question of historical racialism is regarded in Austria in the same way as it is in Germany. This is anything that questions what we call the official version of the Holocaust is regarded as a crime.
Yeah.
And the crime, well, punished, and in Austria even so, he could get up to 20 years, and it was up to the mid-60s, you even could be, well, killed.
Yeah.
Todesstrafe. Yeah, yes, yes. It only changed in the mid-60s, and it was, he could even, killed by the state. It being too pro.
Death penalty.
Yeah, yeah. And now it's, death penalty, right, that's the expression. And now it's up to 20 years in prison. For example, if an Austrian German says, we want the Anschluss, that is, the reunification with the German Reich, that is, 20 years of prison is possible. But if a German says, for example, we want that the rest of the smaller Germany joins Austria, that is no crime. You understand?
Yeah.
It's strange. It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
We are allowed to demand, to ask for a reunification of Germany with Austria. But the German Austrian has not the right to say, well, we want to join the Deutsches Reich, the German Reich. That is a crime.
Yeah, because that's what happened back then.
Yeah, yes, it's crazy. It's crazy. He wasn't.
He was only talking about the National Socialism and stuff.
Yes, yes. He tried to give an objective description of that period. Mm-hmm. And that is a crime in Austria.
Mm-hmm.
Anything positive, for example, that the 1st of May, Labor Day, was introduced by the Nazis, well, it's too positive, you see. And if you say, for example, Reichsarbeitsdienst, nationwide labor work for people unemployed, young people without work, that is too positive. National Socialism must be sold, in quotation marks, as diabolic, despotic, criminal, idiot, negative.
That takes us to some of these other people who have been demonized for this very thing, like Erika Steinbach, who said that there's proof, or, you know, it's historical that Poland was mobilizing for war already in March 1939, and I was reading about that, and I don't know if mobilizing for war is the right word, but this is all true, but now she's gotten into a lot of trouble. So, and I wanted to ask you about Sarrazin, and if you've read his book, and so tell us all about the latest, about those two people.
Okay. Erika Steinbach, or Steinbach as the English would say, is the actual president of the Union of German Refugees from the Eastern Provinces. And she's a party member of the Christian Democrats, the party of Frau Merkel, who still is what I call it a communist. But it is a question of who is responsible for the breaking out of World War II. I will put it, let's say, the frontier conflict between Poland and the Reich, going back to the Treaty of Versailles, was not a European war. It became a European war when Great Britain and France declared the war to Germany. And it got a world war when the USA entered the scene. So the Steinbach case is not about the USA entering the world war the scene, but it's the responsibility of the Polish government to heat the conflict. There were efforts by the German government to settle the problem of a corridor. Maybe you remember, after the Treaty of Versailles, Western Prussia was occupied by the Poles, and then Eastern Prussia was separated from the mainland of Germany, as Alaska is from the States, in between Canada. And then there were a lot of ethnic Germans live still in West Prussia. Tonn, for example, Marienburg, where the Great Order of the Templars settled. And then there were a kind of ethnic cleansing of the Polish government against the Germans. Either they made them Poles or they had to get off. There was what they called the Blood Sunday of Bomberg. And all those led to the outbreak on the 1st of September. But the Poles before, in March of 39, had a kind of partial mobilization of the army. And that is the case when Steinbach said, yes, the Poles cannot say they are innocent. They contributed that this frontier conflict became a war between two nations.
Yes.
And she assisted two party members who were attacked by Frau Merkel and Herr Westerwelle, this homo in the German government. They said, well, everybody challenging the official version that the German Reich under Hitler attacked or invaded Poland, the innocent Poles, is a kind of moral crime. And somebody, as a member of what they call system parties, cannot state such an opinion. That was her crime. It was not a criminal crime. It was a moral, a political crime. That's why she was more or less put aside and she left the leadership committee of the CDU party.
Now, is she out of the CDU? What's her status there?
She's still a member.
I understood they're afraid that she might form another party, so they don't want
her. No. That is what some people dream of that, but it's not reality. She left the leading committee of the CDU, but she's still the president of the Union of the German Refugees of the Eastern Provinces.
Okay.
She stepped back a bit.
She's left this leadership position.
She's still a member of the Christian Democratic Party.
Okay.
And now next to is Thilo Sarrazin. Mm-hmm. Quite an interesting person. He's a member of the Socialist Party. And what he criticizes in his book, Deutschland schafft sich ab, Germany gives up by itself, is quite strange for a man who is a member, who has been a member since the early 70s. And as a responsible politician in Berlin, he was Minister of Finance in the 80s. Well, he only speaks out when his pension is sure. That's a problem. What he says in his books is not new for people who are interested in it. Criminals, they're not only Muslim criminals. They are Negro criminals, they are Asian criminals, they are Jewish criminals in Berlin. And it's not new that a lot of, let's so-called immigrants live on taxpayers' money. Nothing new. But what is new is that somebody on top of the system was part of the leading committee of the German bank. That's his problem. Member of the Socialists and a leading member of the German bank. That is on top of the system, and he speaks out what is for me or my colleagues or comrades knew even before, let's say, 30 years ago. I first published my first essays and books on the immigration problem, invasion problem. I said, it's called an alien invasion, not only being by Muslims, Turks, Arabs, Moroccans, Negroes, Asians, Indians, anything. In my small city of Weinheim, 44,000 people, we have got 130 nationalities. Hmm. You understand? Yes. A small city, 44,000 people, we have got 130
How many? 44,000? 4,400?
Yeah, 44,000.
Okay. Small city,
130 different nationalities. But, well, with the Turks leading, we have got a mosque now since it was built about, let's say, what, 5 years ago. And even the Union of the Protestant Women paid for the lights in the mosque. The Germans are crazy.
Yeah.
And they, if there's no integration, you see, even if a Negro speaks German, he keeps a Negro. And my comment is, if a lion visits a cow stable, or vice versa, the lion stays a lion and the cow stays a cow. Even if they succeed in understanding or in communicating, you see. It's a problem. It's not new, but it's but now, with the Book of Saracen, you can discuss that topic in public. That is very important.
There you go.
You can refer to, let's say, the Saracen Book, well, he is right, but you will see the next elections. The Germans are crazy. They say yes to the Saracen Book, but they vote for the parties who realize what Saracen is criticizing. Crazy, crazy, crazy.
So, what do you expect anything further from Saracen? He's retired now. He's got his nice pension. He's got his good book.
He gets 10,000 euros a month.
Woo!
Yes, pension.
Yeah.
10,000 euros a month. That is about $14,000, I think, US dollars a month pension.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And he still prefers to stay in the Socialist Party. He will even be buried with the party book. And so there will not be new party with heads, with Steinbach, Saracen, Hohmann or others who left the system. They are still part of the system. What is interesting to Saracen? Some pretend he has got, what do you call it now, a Jewish background. The Saracen family comes from the south of France as Protestants, refugees to Prussia. The family settled in the district of Posen, Poznan, where the city of Posen was more or less Germans, but the land around were Polish. And then he came back. No, he doesn't attack in this book, well, the Jews. For example, one sentence or in an interview 2 years ago, that if Jews from Eastern Europe, Soviet Union, come to Germany with an IQ superior of 15% compared to Germans, I will welcome them.
Yes, I read that. He's about IQ.
Yes, he's not against immigration. Mm-hmm. He only wants a special immigration.
Right.
And said, well, if Germany, by chance, I don't think that, will have, let's say, a majority of Muslims, it would be hard for the Jews to get money out of Germany, because the Muslims have no interest to pay the armament of the Israeli army. It's a one-sided description of an actual state of problems concerning alien immigration into the German mainland.
Well, and this is what is discouraging, because people like this come along, we get a lot of news about it, we get enthused about it, we talk about it, but in the end, they're not really on our side. They're not really helping much.
He has concentrated or focused the interest on that topic. That is very, very important. That normal or nationalists can say, well, what Saracen now wrote is not new. Google, go to the statistics of the big cities of, let's say, Hamburg, Berlin. You get everything, how many aliens live on welfare, how many aliens are in prisons, nothing new. No. He has condoned these facts, but not talking about Jewish immigration.
Mm-hmm.
The same as you did mention is the judge from Berlin, Frau Heisisch, who as is pretended, committed suicide. I doubt that. She wrote a book concerning the Berlin problems with young foreigners as criminals. Let's say up to 30, 34, 50% of young in Berlin are of Muslim origin, Turks, Lebanese, or even Muslim Negroes. And this Heisig, well, before her book came out in summer, she, with two daughters, not yet married, not finished her studies, they pretend, had committed suicide. I really doubt that.
So you think that somebody actually murdered her because,
yes,
because
I
they
think
didn't want her staying anymore. She was too effective.
Somebody tried to get rid of her. That's my opinion. I'm not a person who believing in what they call Verschwörung. What's the English term for that?
You're not quick to jump to these kind of conclusions.
Yeah, no.
And no, I know you're
a
not.
Woman who really was a fighter, who had not two daughters to look after, mm-hmm. a mother, the two daughters yes. not yet, let's yes. say, married and established, won't commit suicide.
No. No, I don't think so either. All right, Gunter, we have to take our break now. So,
okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, stay with us. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more on the Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Well, the United States is putting another round of sanctions on Iran in the name of human rights abuses. But there are also some disturbing things going on right here at home that are prompting some to call the decision extremely hypocritical. Author and activist David Swanson joins us from Charlottesville, Virginia, to weigh in. Hey there, David. Let's first talk about the fact that so many people are calling this hypocrisy. Do you agree?
Well, I certainly agree. It's hypocritical for the United States to do such a thing. That the president, without Congress, without the American people doing such a thing, I don't think President Ahmadinejad could do that without other branches of his government. We're not an international body. We're another nation. We pick and choose. When Israel commits human rights abuses, we reward them if Iran does, or whether Iran does or not, we punish them. And this is what we did to Japan before World War II, what we did to Iraq before 2003. It's a lead up to war. And whether accusations are accurate or not, is completely irrelevant to the use of demonization of the leader of Iran as a push for war. We don't pick angels or saints to demonize, but we always exaggerate, we always lie, and we play up human rights abuses. And the hypocrisy is laughable. You see the United States and Iran trading accusations of using the death penalty. And, of course, both nations do, but neither nation is dropping that. We're just trading charges. But our charge has the force behind it that we're building propaganda toward war, and there are no human rights abuses conceivable that can justify war, which is, of course, the greatest human rights abuse, and the sanctions, of course, are a human rights abuse themselves.
I want to broaden this discussion a little bit. Let's listen to a piece of a recent speech given by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. We'll take a listen, and I'll have you react.
Today, again, we call for the immediate release of all political prisoners in Iran and around the world. And we call on the Iranian government to take actions to end these abuses and respect the universal rights and freedoms of its own citizens.
I know, David, you were just touching upon, the death penalty charge and certain things that the U.S. government criticizes Iran for that are done here. I also want to bring into play a few recent examples. Just last week, we heard the sentence for Afia Siddiqui. She was educated here in the United States at MIT. She was kidnapped from Karachi, and turns out she gets 86 years behind bars because, one or two people said that she tried to shoot an FBI officer, even though there was no evidence that showed it. She was tortured and raped, and yet she's being jailed. That's one example of, and there are many more. But talk a little bit about this. What's going on here in the U.S.?
It's an excellent example. We don't have legitimate, credible trials for those we charge with crimes. And we have political prisoners of all varieties. We have Democratic political prisoners that Karl Rove went after, and the Democratic Party, including Hillary Clinton, have no interest in getting out. Former Governor Don Siegelman, former donor to the Democratic Party, Paul Miner, just let them rot. And we have... You know, we use the death penalty, we torture, we rendition, we spy without warrants, we've done away with habeas corpus, we've done away with the right to take a case to trial for victims of these abuses, for victims of torture, just recently for victims of murder that was set up to look like suicide in Guantanamo. We are a nation that leads the world in prison, in incarcerating people. We just are not in any position to be a moral judge of others.
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Jaeger, and my guest is Gunter Deckert from Germany. We're having a very interesting conversation here about a number of topics. We were just talking about the Saracen and Steinbach controversy.
Yes, right.
And now I want Gunter to talk a little bit about the Schulze-Ronhoff book, which is sort of translated as The War That Had Many Fathers.
That's right.
And you're going to have to tell us when that came out, because I don't have all those notes in front of me, and what it was about, what happened, and why it's important today, and why people are talking about it. In fact, Rudy Pischel mentioned it when he was on the program a couple weeks ago.
Okay. What Schulze-Ronhoff wrote in this book is not new. You can even read Pat Buchanan's book on World War II or other books. But... as with the Saracen book, not the contents is important, but the author. Schulze-Ronhoff is a former high-ranking officer of the Western German Army. And that gives his book a certain importance. And sure, it's a bestseller in conservative circles and national circles, but it didn't get the same attention as the Saracen book has got. Mm-hmm. Because there are too many books concerning this matter on the market. And he gives a kind of overview of the whole problem, which is important for people who buy all those books concerning World War II. We have the latest works concerning World War II. Normally, you have to buy every second year a new book to realize what is new in this discussion. And that is the, let's say, importance and the merit of the Schulze-Ronhoff book. And, as I put it, the author is important. It's not a Mr. Unknown. It is, as I told, a former high-ranking officer of the Western German Army. And even he was attacked, he was threatened, and his book was criticized in the mainstream media, Spiegel, Stern, Focus, all those leftist magazines who, well, don't want to get this affair, this World War II, presented in an objective manner. That's it.
Yes, well, was his book, did it go as far as Pat Buchanan's book, The Unnecessary War?
Yes, it's the same as Hocken's book. Hocken was a kind of icebreaker in the early 60s. And the only difference between Hocken and Schulze-Ronhoff is that there are 50 years in between and there were new research work. And you will find that in the Schulze-Ronhoff book. But the consequences or the conclusions are more or less the same. That's why Der Krieg, Der viele Väter, the war which had a lot of fathers.
Yeah, to make it clear that it's historically incorrect to blame Germany for starting that war as they did at Nuremberg and as the Allies plotted to do.
No, well, it's quite sure. It's a difference. The book I always mention to young people is Der Kühnert. The German title is Ein Weltkrieg wird programmiert. A world war is programmed. That's what I'm saying. It's step by step. The frontier conflict. We have frontier between the USA and Mexico. And then there's Canada and Brazil melting in. And then the whole of South America is against the States. And then the Caribbean islands are against the States, and Bahamas are in favor of the United States. That is, it got step by step from a problem created by the Treaty of Versailles and by the interest, let's say, of the international establishment, Germany withdrawing from the gold, from the gold standard, have another standard, the German industry growing, not seen with good eyes by the British, and there is the rivalry between France and Germany, and all those old things who led to the First World War came up again. But let's say the frontier conflict got, well, a world war by the declaration of war of Great Britain and France to the German Reich, and then with the States, and then came Japan and Russia and things like that.
Yeah, okay.
And though, let's say, Schulze-Ronhoff put all together and tries, and he does so, to present an objective description of all those events which finally, well, led to what is called World War II.
The point that I want to make that is becoming something that I think I should bring out more and more clearly, if anybody misses it, is that everything that we are taught is just about a lie. I mean, everything is such a lie. I mean, we just live in the age of lie. I don't know if that's always been the case, but today it is certainly true. And the bigger the lie, the harder it is for people to believe that it's a lie, as Adolf Hitler taught it.
And above all, if it's repeated again and again, that's the problem. Those authors or historians or researchers who come to conclusions that are different from the official version get problems, either attacked, threatened, books not well reviewed, not paid, or they lose their jobs and things like that. That is, well, you can compare the system as the Holy Catholic in the Middle Ages. Anything or everything that doesn't correspond to the official version is heresy, and the heretic people must be burned in between quotation marks. And nowadays, books are only burned, and the persons, the authors, not yet.
Excellent. And that brings us to the topic of this BPB, the German Supreme Court ruling, which is a very interesting, and you're going to tell us about it. I have an article, a press release, and an article by Alfred de Zayas has written about it. But I had a little bit of it in English, and somebody translated some of the German. But give us the background on that.
De Zayas, who is, I remember, an Hispano-American, is a very, very known historian and researcher in Germany. He, in I think 30 years ago, started to study those documents concerning the expulsion of the Germans from the Eastern Province, the ethnic cleansing of the Germans. Well,
yes.
And he is still an objective observer of, let's say, the German question. And what he was talking about in his press releases is that certain Professor Löw, a sociologue, what I saw you call in German, sociologe, had written
sociologist.
Had written a book for what they call the German Office of Political Information. It was a kind of, well, work demanded by that office, which is paid by the taxpayer. And when a lot of copies had been sent out, some leftists realized that this Professor Löw, who is, I think, a member of the Christian Social Union in Bavaria, had a different opinion of the role of the leader of the Jews in the Third Reich. For example, cooperation between Zionists and the National Socialists, things like that. And that was a point that this office had ordered the books back, and Professor Löw now went to court to have...
Well, wait a minute. They ordered the books back, and they also... They also said that they apologized in their
Yes.
And then they said they were going to pulp all the remaining copies.
Yes, right. And Professor Löw said no, and he went to court, and he won. And the Kunin says, well, he has the right that his book will still be published or sold or given or presented to the public. That is not, he's not a revisionist, but he had a special, well, point of view concerning a part of the Third Reich history. But it's interesting that he, as a member of the system, he's not a revolutionist in this context, now had won a battle against those, well, leftists in an official office who lives on taxpayers' money. That is the victory of the thing. And people learn that, well, what is now said about the Jews and the Third Reich is not quite correct concerning or corresponding to what Professor Löw had found out in his research work.
Let's just say,
now he says some positive of the Third Reich, and that is not accepted by the moral leftists in the mainstream media.
Yes, I'm not so much in agreement with what Professor Löw said, but it is a great victory that he's allowed to say it, and that this organization...
Not only allowed to say it, that his book can still be published and sold. That is important.
Yeah, and maybe they should be required to apologize to him, because it says that making those statements about him and saying they were going to destroy his work represented a stigmatization of him.
I don't think, though, that the people in this office, well... Are paid civil servants, people with no names, no influence. They have to react like puppets, and they only did react not only because they had found out, because somebody outside had found out, and now there was some pressure on the government, and the government exerts some pressure on this office, and the people who are paid by the state must obey. That's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
They're not independent. That's not an independent office. That is run by official civil servants who are selected or given the jobs by the government in power, be it leftist, right, or the centrist or conservative. That's a problem.
Yeah.
And only the students, normally, this office sends out all these books free, to get a free copy. And the copy is paid by the taxpayer. And this is why it's important. It is sent to schools, to universities.
I see, because it's an agency for civic education.
Agency. Yeah, sure, okay. Sure. And they sent out all those copies free to schools, grammar schools, universities, special high schools, and that is a kind of influence. They could send out a book describing or giving another picture of the Third Reich. Because it disturbs this criminalization of the Third Reich. Everything negative, no? Apart from that, there's a certain Ali, a Professor Ali. His book is Die Wohlfahrtsdiktatur, the welfare dictatorship. The Germans were, well, as my parents, for the first time they were on a crusade, Kraft durch Freude.
Mm-hmm.
The first mass tourism organized by the National Socialists.
Mm-hmm.
And people who went against the system, think of the third Berlin Olympics. Everything was okay. And those against the system, people didn't realize as today. If people can live in calm, they have got their jobs, can raise their children, can go abroad, get holidays, there's no protest against the government in power.
Yes.
And that is not, the Third Reich must all be presented negative.
Exactly.
That's the problem.
Exactly. Very good.
Yeah.
Yes. And now, let's finish up with the fact that's been in the news so much and talked about, which is good, that Germany supposedly was celebrating the end of the World War I by the end of their reparations. And people are shocked and surprised because they had no idea that Germany was still paying reparations for World War I. And it's in the form of some kind of bonds or something. But the story is even more shocking as to how they were required to pay all that. And I understand, I want to make this point before you start telling us about it, that the Weimar governments, after the Treaty of Versailles and all, they had to pay out in gold. They had to pay, and it went to the United States, because the United States was the creditor nation for all this. And they paid until they had no more gold left. And then they couldn't pay any more of it. And I thought, why would anybody do that? And when Hitler came in, of course, he stopped those payments, and rightly so. So tell us about that.
Well, let's say the end of the payment concerning of the First World War is a kind of, a riddle or a secret. You had never been taught at school or universities. It was called under the hand, we called that in Germany. It was in secret. The social power didn't want that the public knows that we are still paying debts concerning the First World War. You say, First World War? And what are you going to pay for the Second? How long will it take until we have finished paying the debts for the Second World War? The system of the politicians didn't want the people to get angry or uneasy. They only want the people should be, well, live in calm, should work, pay taxes, raise children, and nothing that could disturb that, we call that Ruhe, this special kind of quietness, well, was more or less out of question and wasn't treated in the mainstream media. And even not as good, apart from the universities, with the special seminars concerning, well, World War II, Treaty of Versailles, reparations, and things like that. Only some special knew about that. And even now, in my less local paper, there was nothing to be found concerning the end of the First World War reparations. People should not know about that, because they are going to start in question how long we will have to pay for the Second World War.
Well, in the fact that first Germany was required to lay down their arms, they said, we're all going to do it, and you do it first. And they did, because they were now ruled by this new government. They weren't ruled by the Kaiser anymore. The Kaiser had been forced down by the communists, and so now there was a new government in Berlin, and so it said, yes, okay, we'll do that. So they lay down all their arms, and they're all enumerating what they are, and so on.
The rest of them
decided they wouldn't do that, and now Germany was, you know, at their mercy. So then
Germans or even the socialists trusted an American president, a certain Mr. Wilson.
That's right.
And they trusted the 13 points, and the points and the theory are okay, you see, but the reality, what came out of the 13 points, was, well, disgraceful to Germany, was, and more or less led to Hitler and led to the Second World War, if you want to say that. If, for example, the right of self-determination had been granted to Germans as well, there would have been no frontier conflict with Poland. And people do forget, it was the German Reich that gave the Poles their independence. The Poland was part of Tsarist Russia. And at Brest-Litovsk, Poland got its independence. And they thanked the Germans for taking land away and driving Germans out of, well, Western Prussia, Bromberg, another ton for German cities, German country. And they created the corridor problem. There were still ethnic Germans in the Poznan area, outside Upper Silesia, and things like that. And, well, they forgot that. And as a thank, well, they thanked the Germans by enacting land and driving Germans out of these areas.
Right, and also, though, the reparations that were demanded were decided on months after the treaty was signed, or Germany had signed away all its rights, and now it was forced to pay this this huge amount of money. And
Karen, it's quite normal. Who has lost a war will pay for everything. That is everything. It was always so. When the Romans had won a battle, the souls they had defeated had to pay the debt. Nothing had changed, though the moral standards have changed a bit.
The National Socialists that formed after that had this slogan, what they called the stab in the back. We weren't beaten on the battlefield.
Yes, that is hardly because there was the revolution at the home front, I would call that, organized by communists and the socialists. And that is why, well, the German army hadn't been defeated on the front, but let's say the home front was exhausted. The people were fed off the war, the troubles increased.
Yeah, do you think?
There was food problems, even though after the First World War a lot of children died because there was this blockade by the British fleet and things, Royal Fleet and so on. And it was, well, a coincidence of negative events that finally, well, led to the armistice, and then the victors, the winners, dictated the treaty. It was
It was an armistice. Yeah. It was an armistice.
The treaty was dictated, and the Germans had only to accept. And was the step in the back, well, was the German army had been defeated by the home front, well, socialist, communist, had more or less not given the necessary support to get a kind of, we call it in German, Verständigungsfriede, a peace treaty giving the right to both parties in question. Mm-hmm. Finally, it was only ein Diktat, it was dictated. It was not a kind of peace treaty, there was no effort to appease the two war parties. And that was the step in the back. The German delegation had to accept everything, no signs, no chance of discussing any of the points dictated to them. And yes. there was a bad legacy to all those governments in the Weimar Republic, and combined with the Black Friday of the Wall Street, more or less led to unemployment, led to big problems, and there was only the chance between, well, right or left, communists, who were very strong, and then the upcoming of the National Socialist Party.
And you see how these kinds of bad decisions and cruel and heartless decisions and wrong decisions lead to such horrors in the future. I mean,
And let's say the mind or the memory of a people is a long one. If your father was on the front, he came home, the socialist, his family, no branding, that he transfers to his children, to his grandchildren, and things like that. The memory of a nation or of people is a very, like an elephant. They never forget.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, I want to tell our English readers who are listening that I want to recommend that they go to a blog that I enjoy, which is Scrapbook Pages blog, because there was a good post on this very subject, and that's where I got some of my information. So you might want to go there. You can Google it and find it. In the little bit of time that we have left, and it's not much, maybe I'm just going to go straight to the fact that I saw today that the U.S. apologized for a 1940 syphilis study in Guatemala, where they were deliberately, it's been discovered, unearthed by a medical historian from Wellesley College, that American scientists deliberately infected prisoners and patients in a mental hospital in Guatemala with syphilis between the years of 1946 and 1948. And this was funded by the National Institute of Health. So, I mean, this was totally establishment. Everybody knew about it, but it's been covered up, and now somebody brought it up, and now they're all apologizing like they never heard of such a thing. And, oh, how horrible that such a thing happened. And here we are. They were doing this right after the war, at the time that these trials were going on in Germany, where they were accusing the Nazi regime of
crimes against prisons. Humanity.
Yes, for using prisoners.
Okay, I must leave you now. Thank you very much, okay. Mike. Thank you very much, Caroline. It was nice to be with you. Have a good time, and up to next time.
Thank you very much, Gunter.
Yeah, bye.
Gunter had to go to the hospital. It's hospital visiting hours now, and as he said in the beginning, his wife is in the hospital. So we have to let him go. And in the little time that we have left, I want to finish the article about a syphilis study that took place in Guatemala under the auspices of the American NIH, or National Institute of Health. And the details of this are that from 1946 to 1948, American scientists deliberately infected prisoners and patients in a mental hospital in Guatemala with syphilis. And this was uncovered by a Wellesley College medical historian. And as soon as this was uncovered, Wellesley College medical historian didn't know he wasn't supposed to do that, and that this obviously has been known all along by American establishment, but that, of course, they're all coming up with their apologies. And for example, the Secretary of State Hillary Clinton always said it was just appalled that, and just apologizes to the Guatemalan government. And President Barack Obama has apologized, and his press secretary has apologized, and the Health and Human Services Secretary Sebelius has apologized. Well, of course, they can all say, oh, this I had nothing to do with this. This was done under those people back then, and it's tragic, and we're certainly sorry. And what's funny is that the Guatemalan embassy official said that his country hadn't known anything about it until Clinton called to apologize him, and they appreciate that, but it won't affect their relationship. I mean, none of these people really care, and they never did care about these mental patients and what was done to them. And this was at a time, 1946 to 1948, when they were having all these trials in Germany, the Allies, all these war crimes trials, accusing the terrible Nazis of doing medical experiments on prisoners. and of course exaggerating unbelievably by these lying witnesses what took place. Of course, there was a euthanasia program for about 1 year, and this was the hopelessly mentally insane, who were the kind of people who had to lay on straw because they were constantly defecating in their beds and had to be tied down and were, you know, like, I know it was incurably insane patients. They had a euthanasia program for these people because there were enough of them that they were using up personnel and caregiving, and they had all these soldiers from the war that needed to give care. They needed hospital space. And this was decided that this was a good idea for society, and I don't think it was too terribly bad. And they weren't injecting them with syphilis. They were just euthanizing them in a painless fashion. But this is just the kind of incredible hypocrisy that we are subjected to and that most people, unfortunately, fall for. And this business of the lie that we live with, and it's so hard to get attention on all the lies that are being told, is something that I'm going to continue to talk about, because the lie is really is what's wrong with the world today. What's wrong is that we live under such incredible lies, but that really is nothing new either. But it's still what the problem is. So this is Carolyn Yeager saying good night, and thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening. The Heretics Hour returns Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.